let's go back to Luke's gospel this morning. Luke 12. Looking at this section on the warning to beware of covetousness. Again, as I hinted at last time, I don't want to get into a lot of background, because if I do, I'll probably spend most of the time in the background. You can give a fairly good background in most messages like this when you're going through exposition. But sometimes I run into a passage and I'm only speaking to myself that requires such an in-depth background to really, I think, gain understanding of where you're going. So I once again just say, listen to the message last week and you'll have a perfect step into this particular section. I think we kind of hinted around what was this man's solution. He was already rich. He already had full barns. He evidently had enough crops and goods where he didn't have to worry about the crop that was at hand. And even if his barns were full as a result of the present crops, he had such an abundance left over that instead of actually doing something with it to help others, he was perplexed as what he could do to take this crop and help himself. He didn't really have any care for anybody else. He only cared for himself. And so he was all perplexed and all aggravated and anxious over what to do with his stuff, because he had no intention of giving it to anyone else. It was all his. I was watching a program that I recorded about the curse of the lottery. And I was, you know, going through, you might have seen already or something similar. And it's amazing, these people go from nothing to millions of dollars, and the first thing they start doing is buying a bunch of cars. One man brought 27 cars. 27 cars, two of those limousines. And he didn't buy 27 Versas or 27 Yaris's. He brought 27 cars. And he was only making, according to the program, is his, he decided to get the yearly division, and he was making something like $500,000 a year. And he's buying for 27 cars. That, my math isn't all that sharp, but I'm sure that's pretty much rounds about what he just has for the year, and brought this huge mansion, buying tractors, airplane, farms, plural, just buying all kinds of outrageous things with this money. And most of the people that won these lotteries immediately started buying multiple automobiles, bunches of cars, for no apparent reason, and just outrageous things. You know, going to the home, everything's made of diamonds. And see, that's covetousness. That's what I was talking about. Instead of really doing something, and he gave a house for kids that he was associated with, $9,000. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm sure the people appreciate it, but $9,000 when you're buying, you know, double-digit cars is really an insult. You could have took that money and easily given much more than that to the people that really needed it. So, you know, it's ridiculous to see these people with money. And this man, in this parable, he had the ability to do something with the goods that actually God gave him. He thought he amassed them on his own. But his solution to his bumper crop was, I'll pull down my barns or my stores, my storehouses, and I'll build giant ones to accommodate everything that I already have and everything that's, you know, that I can't store. And then I will retire. I'm going to say to my soul, relax. Hey, me, relax. You got it made. You got it going on. You got it together. what's happening now, what's going to be like. You don't have to do anything anymore. You already have arrived at the place where you're set for life, as it were. Everything is the way you wanted it, and then some. And all that attitude is covetousness, which he decided he wanted more than what was necessary. He was already rich. He was already filled with possessions. He didn't need the crops, bumper or otherwise. He was already rich. It didn't say he became rich. He was already a rich man. But he wanted more. And he decided to expand his storage capacity to store all of his goods. Again, back to that program. One man had won a lottery, $44 million after taxes. He divided his money. So he's $1.25 million a year. So what does he do with his money? First thing,
cars.
Bunch of cars. I don't know what it is about these cars. And he went on a huge shopping spree, you know, just amassing all this stuff. I think in one room, he had, so many televisions. Why do you need all these big screens? Well, anyway, you know, he was a mild-mannered guy, and the demons were there. They came out, and he wound up blowing his chest out with a shotgun. He lost his family. He was in so much debt, went to gambling, you know, gambled much of it away, and then spent more than what he had. Listen, tell me something. This, I even applaud everyone in the viewing and the listening audience. You're a man that has a job, and you're in the country, so you're not making that much money. You're just getting by, and you have a normal job, wife and kids, and suddenly you come into $1.25 million a year for the next 20 years. What is it that $1.25 million can buy you beyond your necessities? Why do you think you have to have more? When did you need $1.25 million of stuff to live as a necessity? He was already living his necessities, but then he got all this stuff. And so when did all of a sudden he had a little house and a little bit of money, and he was making ends meet. Why all of a sudden does that change to, okay, I need more than $1.25 million a year, and that becomes a need? It is not covetousness. You see, he wanted more, and so much more that he overspent $1.25 million in the first year and got in so much debt that he had to hire a lawyer, you know, who specializes in those morons who can't handle $1.25 million a year. And so he had to get an attorney to come and go to the courts to try to get whatever money he could for a structured settlement. And so he had $1.25 million for a number of years. And so he traded, you know, multiple millions of dollars to get two. And wound up, after he finished paying his bills, spent all that money, and then, you know, back to square nothing. Wound up having to commit suicide. But this man here, he says, I'm going to build bigger. I'm going to build great, large, huge barns to store everything that's here. And I'm going to tell myself, just relax. Verse 19, I will say to my soul, so thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Just live it up. Live it up. Spend thy life in ease, luxury, and myrrh. Put away the evil day far from thee. Never trouble thyself about a future state. Not to worry about the future. Tomorrow shall be as this day, and much more abundantly, and you have enough to make yourself happy, and let nothing disturb you. Give loose to all sensual pleasures and carnal joys. Keep relaxing, keep eating, keep drinking, keep giving yourself over to these pleasures. Everything is fine. I really scolded this wicked country of ours. As I said in closing, what we're witnessing in our country right now, this moment, in our economic collapse, is the net result of trusting in riches and what happens to those who do when their wealth is taken away. We in America have been riding a bubble of fake and fantasy wealth and have not considered God in anything. Our wealth, as this man in the parable revealed, was our God. We connected our lives to our wealth, our retirement accounts, our jobs, our never-ending super inflated Ponzi scheme in housing and stocks. We have lived as if the money would just keep on flowing unhindered, all along knowing and denying that the fundamentals were all wrong to continue this fraud forever, and that when any one of these financial linchpins were to unravel, the entire financial house would all come falling down, thus proving the point that it was all a sham to begin with. And the worst is yet to come, and all we hear from Washington are more blatant lies, and we are so stupid to believe them because we are covetous. Let's just keep believing the lies that they're going to make a way for us to continue in this covetous mind. And as I said, and I'll say it again, worse than that, than all of this, I don't hear anyone saying it, though I believe maybe a few people are, is the fact that we are living and speaking to ourselves that these problems do not have at the core a spiritual foundation, a spiritual issue. And that's where this is. Once you dismiss God, you have to go to covetousness, because covetousness is idolatry. If you don't trust God, you're going to be an idolater. And so covetousness is just part of that. And at the core of all this rejection of God is covetousness, is idolatry. And idolatry is the worship of false gods. And since this man in the parable was speaking to himself and in his deception, attached to his wealth, to his own life, and believed that his life was directly connected to his wealth, then he was in essence worshiping himself, as multitudes are doing right now. He, as multitudes are doing today, have dismissed any accountability to God, any accountability of total submission to God, and instead have set themselves up towards the worship of self through covetousness. He, as we, are bankrupt towards God to the degree that in our practice, we don't care about him at all. That's the key, the practice. I don't care about the words, and the Lord doesn't care about them either. It's the practice that we do not care about God at all. We're bankrupt and don't seem to be bothered about it. We may offer some useless religious speak and may involve ourselves in some religion or religious behavior, but when it comes to our lives and our wealth, we are covetous. We just want more and more and more and build bigger barns and hedges and securities, etc., with no end. Contentment is nowhere to be seen. We have programmed ourselves to live an opulent life and lifestyle. It will not move from that standard of living, as we call it, because that's what it is. It's a standard of living. Again, we attach quantity of living to opulence. It is programmed in our, almost in our DNA, but I can't say that. It's programmed into our nature, really, to want more. That when you get what you want more than you got. Lord, if you just give me this, I'll be happy. Okay, so you get it. And in addition to that, I want to be really happy, and it never ends because you're never content. See, contentment is great gain. What did Paul say in 1 Timothy 6? I'm not going to turn there, but Paul said, godliness with contentment is great gain. You know why? Because he says in the next verse, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is a certainty we can carry nothing out. See, once you're godly and content, you have a right perspective of this world. You didn't bring anything into it. You're certainly not going to bring anything out. So in the meantime, he said, having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. Until we're satisfied and we have a godly mind and we're content, the other alternative is covetousness. That's what the Bible teaches. And people are going to want more and more, and they're never going to be satisfied. Never enough. You got the money? You got a car? What? Now you need, 20, 28 more? It's ridiculous. That's covetousness. You don't need more. It's covetousness. It's programmed into our natures to be covetous, because behind that is idolatry. See, we don't see the problem with this is all spiritual. And we certainly ain't going to see it today in our society. No one's going to be able to tell us any different. And this one, the messages that folk are going to want to skip over or go get a cold beverage right now and not come back. They're going to all of a sudden have a desire to go to the bathroom for like another 45 minutes. Go wherever you want to go. You can skip over whatever you want. The truth is still there, and God isn't going to care whether you get a cold beverage or take a walk outside. The truth is the truth. Wealth is the standard, and we must fight to maintain and build upon that standard. We just can't have enough. We have to keep building more and more and more, amassing more and more and more. And now think with me. The covetous nature of the person is intensified even more now, as many people have lost, a great, great deal of their retirement. That's going to propel them into greater fits of covetousness, because they want to get to the place where they were before they lost everything, because that's what they factored into in their thinking as a way of retirement and living. So if you got, Johnny Bucks over here, and his retirement was $600,000, and he loses, let's say a third of that, and so he's down to, $400,000, and he's thinking, I already planned $600,000 to live. I'm planning all this stuff now. What do you think is going to happen to him? He's going to be wanting to do even more things to become more covetous, to get to that place where he was before he lost that money, because in his mind and in his family's mind, this is what we need to survive, given the GDP and everything. I'm just, my retirement is in line with all this mess. And now we in the hurt. And no one's taken into consideration that you could die today and it wouldn't matter anyway. And that multitudes have died with the same thought. Our standard is wealth in this country. Anyone thinking other than that is a fool, a liar, because that's what our standard is. We boast about being the richest country in the world, and we are. I'm not knocking that, but look at what it has done to us. It has corrupted us. Well, let me take that back. Our covetousness has corrupted us. The wealth doesn't do anything. You put money on the table, and they'll sit there forever, like the stupid Geico commercial, with the money in the eyes. It's just sitting right there. It's not doing anything. You can leave that there forever. It's not going to do anything. It's our hearts towards it and our practice towards it. Again, wealth is the standard, and we must fight to maintain and build upon that standard. God is forgotten. The poor are ignored, and greed, covetousness, and hoarding becomes the normal way of life. And it has been that, and it is that. And I'm really cueing in to a lot lately, financial decisions have been made in this country and by individuals, by corporations. I can see the angst in a lot of the poor. I'm trying to be not open-minded, but I'm trying to be objective. Having an open mind isn't necessarily a good thing. Being objective is the best thing, because an open mind takes everything in. You take everything in, you're liable to take something in that's, you don't want to keep, can't get rid of. That's like a computer. If you don't have a firewall, you can. An unfirewall computer is the equivalent of an open mind. It lets everything come in, including the viruses and the malware, the Trojan, the back doors, everything. So you let everything come in, there's no discernment. But if you have a firewalled mind, that's not right. I'm not letting that in. You have to block everything that you don't need. But I've been trying to be objective to all this stuff, and I'm seeing corporations are evil. The people running these joints are wicked. A lot of decisions been made at the corporate level are just downright criminal. At every branch, you talk about government. I was listening to a KFI yesterday, and our California budget is a joke. It is the colossal joke of the century. How we're talking about we need to cut this and that and the other thing, and we're sitting around there, and the certain groups that do absolutely nothing, produce absolutely nothing in this state, have gotten bonuses of almost $400,000, bonuses more than their salaries, which they still ain't doing nothing. And the justification when questioned was, well, we figured that it would cost us more to hire outside help rather than to give these people bonuses to do the work. This is your legislation. This is your California democratically controlled legislators ripping you off with your eyes wide open and telling you it's not being ripped off. They have an excuse for everything. Greed at every level. The government criticizes private sector. They're the most corrupt people in the world, the government is. I'm not advocating anything. I'm just keeping it real. They're corrupt as could possibly be. And now they want to do Proposition 1A through Z, whatever. Another Ponzi scheme. Everything except we should have stopped all this spending, like a person that won the lottery and spent more than he had, more than he needed many years ago. But no one listened. Well, now we're living the consequences of it. But all this wealth, this greed, it's there. And it's driving the madness that's everywhere. It's driving, it's exploding. It's the gasoline and the fire that's causing the insanity that's going on. We see nothing yet. People are losing their minds. We have seen nothing yet. We built a society on greed and covetousness, and now we see the results of it collapsing. It hasn't finished collapsing. It has a people trying to give us hope. Y'all being bamboozled, hoodwinked. This thing is far from over. You better listen to the big black preacher sometime in your existence. You don't have to like his personality. That has nothing to do with it. Examine objectively what's being said. Do your own homework. Stop being a 5-minute listener. Learn to do some thinking. Go back to verse 18. And he said, this will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods, and I will say unto my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. That's his plan. And his only. And I'm sure his friends commended him and praised him for the bumper crop and maybe the wisdom and the smarts that he implied or employed and being able to do what he did and the idea of building bigger barns. Wow, that's a good idea. Yeah, might even be able to give some people in the community a few jobs. That was all his plan. That was his plan. And the way he said it, he thought it was solid gold. It was already happening. Nothing was going to change his plan. Looked like we made it. But God said unto him, see that's and most people's thinking that's the problem. See, the last person we want to hear from is God. But we will hear from God. But God said unto him, thou fool, you senseless, stupid moron, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? You see the sarcasm? Okay, so what are you going to do with those things which you have provided? You act like this was all you, and you treated it as if it were all you. And now I want to introduce you to me. And you have an appointment with me, and you might have told your soul to take it easy, but there's not going to be any ease for your soul. See, covetous people always forget. always forget what I call the God factor. What do I mean about the God factor? Well, the God factor, in a sense, every single series you have heard from the moment you stepped into the teaching of this church taught you the God factor. There's no way, I don't care where you've come in this fellowship, or where you've stepped in, television, radio at that time, the webpage now, wherever you stepped in to this ministry, you were taught that moment the God factor from then on. The God factor, or dynamic, is simply stated that God is sovereign and does whatever he wants to whomever he wants, whenever he wants, and for whatever reason he wants, irrespective of any and all human beings, or without taking into account mankind's will as opposed to his own. Let's see if I can shorten that up, make it more understandable to the audience that doesn't want that kind of a lengthy description, and it might confuse them a little bit. God does what he wants. He don't care what you think about it. God is sovereign. See, we don't like a sovereign God. Well, too bad, because he's sovereign. You're not sovereign. See, covetous people, in their mind, they think they're sovereign. They think they control everything. See, and I could spend a great deal of time in Ecclesiastes, where the writer of Ecclesiastes warned about people who spend all their time worried about their money, staying up all night long and, you know, getting all messed up. Look, here's Harley Howard's free bonus, all right? I still think it's up there. Go to the website and look at the Bible studies. There's a whole, I believe, I have to check it, but I think it's up there. The whole book of Ecclesiastes. I did a commentary in Ecclesiastes called Life Stinks Without God. And so just go and read it. And then resume back to your normal programming of following this truth. But I'm telling you right now that the whole book of Ecclesiastes chronicles people whose lives stink. And who, through various reasons and various means, they make all this money, and then they're all concerned about it, and then they store it up, but that's not satisfying because it's just sitting there doing nothing. But you're afraid if you start spending, you wind up spending it all, and you have nothing. And then you're worried about, if I spend nothing, that's wise, but I got a bunch of idiots for relatives, and I didn't work all this hard for them. I worked all this hard for me. So it's this constant catch-22 all the time. You don't know what to do with your life. You don't know what to do with your money. And then if you start spending it, one man, you know, God says he gave him the ability to make wealth, but not the ability to enjoy any of it. He has some disease or sickness or malady which befalls him, and he can't do nothing with it. And on it goes. I could spend all that time in the world just doing that, but I'm not going to do it. Just go on the website, www.fotbc.org, and look in the Bible study section. That should be in the Bible books, and you see Ecclesiastes. Click it on and get an understanding about spiritual things. The God factor is God is sovereign. He does what he wants to do to whomever he wants to do, whatever he wants to do to, and he's not taking into any consideration or any account any of all human beings or will as opposed to his own. He does what he wants to do. He's the king. A king does what he wants to do. The king is not subject to his subjects. The king is king. See, our country has no concept of that, of course. I'm not saying we need one, but we have no concept of that understanding where there's a rule and everyone's subject. You don't have any right. Now, see, we're used to this, what's called a democracy. Not really a democracy, it's a republic. But I'm not even sure how long that's going to be anymore. But anyway, we're not used to having a single authoritative figure. And I'm hearing a bzz, 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 that maybe we need to have a king to rule over us. You know, some people just don't need to be in front of anything where they can record something and speak, where someone has to play anything they have to say. The last thing we need is a king, unless it's the King of Kings. But we don't know anything about that by way of experience, because we've always had all these personal rights, and we can say we want, well, not much anymore, but you could say used to be able to have freedom of speech, which is rapidly disappearing. But anyway, in a kingdom, you had no such rights. The king just dictated, and you do it or you suffer the consequences. That's the rule. Now, if you're going to be God, you're going to have infinite sovereignty. In other words, God's sovereignty does not expire in the year 2046. You know, you buy a can of something, there's always an expiration date. There's no expiration date with God. God is sovereign because God is a creator. And since he's a creator, he can do what he wants with his creation. And he doesn't care what his creation thinks because as subjects, we don't really have the right to criticize our maker. Who art thou that repliest against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, why hast thou made me thus? Does not the potter have power over the clay of the same lump to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? Doesn't the potter have the right to do what he wants with clay? Yeah. God is in control of everything and everyone. So we have to understand that so many times we forget that unalterable fact of reality, but God doesn't forget the God factor. This is all perfectly fitting into the will of a sovereign God. I have warned this nation, this country, the church for decades that we have been sticking our fist in the face of God and challenging him and trying to remove him from everything, ignoring him in the church. And one day we're going to pay the price, and looks like we're beginning to pay. We ain't seen nothing yet. And we're not learning anything yet, evidently. We keep forgetting the God factor. How many people lost their retirement because God allowed it for a specific reason? Unknown to everybody else. Who cares if everybody else knows it or understands it? We're the ones supposed to know it. Santa Barbara, beautiful homes. A bunch of them got burnt to the ground the last few days of this recording. There's no security in stuff. None. Zero, because no one knows. Beautiful homes, gone. Possessions, gone. Keep forgetting. Like this man, this covetous man. He lived his life the way he planned it, the way he wanted to. He did it his way, or so he thought. He mapped out the plan of his life. He had all of his riches lined up and calculated that he had enough for many years to come. That's what he said. He says, thou hast much goods. The word much can mean many. Much goods laid up or stored up for many years. He retired. I'm done. That's it. Take it easy. I'm done. I'm that's it. It's over. He was, as we would say, set for life. We keep using these expressions that we don't even connect the reality that we're associating things with duration of life. We do it unconsciously and habitually and don't even think about it, associating materialism with life. You never see a poor person say, I'm set for life. You ever heard a homeless, I'm set for life? I don't think so. Come on. We know what that expression means, and we know who it is directed to. It's directed to the covetous. But he was not prepared for death. See, in his mind, he was prepared for life, but he wasn't prepared for death. And most people aren't prepared for death because they're not really prepared for life. And tonight, death was going to visit this man's life. He was going to have an appointment with God through the death angel. He had no idea. He's just going on and we don't like this death thing. We don't like thinking about it. We don't like confronting it. We don't like talking about it. We act like it's not going to happen. It's very uncomfortable. You know where that mindset comes from? It comes from covetousness. People die all the time. I've been talking for about 36 minutes. A lot of people have died so far. around this world. As long as it don't happen to me, I don't care about it. Yeah, well, you keep on living. So from the perspective of many people, this man had arrived. He was ready for that retirement living. He was prepared for a life of ease and plenty and did not have to care or to be in want of anything. He was set. He didn't have to think about a thing. And didn't. Worse, he didn't think about his soul. It's another trap of the rich. In fact, this was true from his own perspective, but his covetous life was going to be met by the ultimate power of God. No one wants to talk about God until there's some tragedy in the country, or tragedy in this, and all of a sudden God somehow pops up in so many people's experience. Isn't it amazing? A tragedy happens. Suddenly, we want God in on the picture. God, make it better. God, make me feel better. God, make me not hurt. God this and God that. Until that time, we weren't thinking about him. Now, all of a sudden, God is popping up on the scene. All these chaplains and preachers. Where these guys come from? They weren't around. Now, they're popping out the woodwork. Funeral homes. We got the, you know, the pay-for-play preacher and all this other kind. Then suddenly, you know, Uncle Willie, he was a faithful member of the church. When? In 1812? What church was he a part of? He never dogged it over church. What, was that his baptism at that time as a baby? The dedication ceremony? Yeah, he was a faithful member as a toddler. Suddenly, we want to associate God and everything. And he's up looking. He's looking down. And no, he ain't. He's in hell. And he's crying out, oh, God, have mercy. Too late for that. We don't want to think about that. Listen, I'm going to tell like it is. Everybody ain't in no heaven. And ain't nobody that don't know Jesus. This side, we're going to put Uncle Willie and Aunt Sally and Grandpa Moses in the grave in a bunch of hell raises all their lives. And suddenly they're going to be in heaven. You deceived too. Everybody ain't in heaven because you put them there. This person and God needs another this, and the angels need, God don't need nothing. Angels don't need nothing either. Angels got God. Why would angels need another angel? They already got enough right there. That's stupid. Well, you know, God, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Now all of a sudden God pops up in the picture. God is everywhere now because you want to, you know, you want to get a little Band-Aid for your owie because you didn't face death because you thought, because you're covetous, that you're going to keep on keeping on, keep on living. But what did this man, what did God say of the perspective and thinking of the covetous man? Now, I know no one's going to listen to what I have to say about anything. I already know that. As I said time and time again, even though I said all this, I know that no one's going to pay any mind to what's being said. But they'll never be able to say it wasn't said. What was God's perspective? And what did God say? Because he had the final word. I don't know how the man died. Don't really care how he died. Just know he died. And he wasn't set for life. He wasn't set for life after. And that's what he need to be sure of. God said, thou fool. God said the man was a fool. God's looking at America saying, all you covetous people, you're just a bunch of fools. You're all fools. The word fool, as according to Thayer, it's an adjective meaning without reason. See, you got to have some sense. See, most folk don't have sense. Fools. Without reason. No ability to have a reasonable, rational conversation or rational thinking, where they can sit down and weigh all sides of an objective discussion and choose that which is good. Acknowledge it at the very least. Nah, not a fool. Also senseless. Yeah. And we admire rich people, many people admire rich people and they hold them up into high esteem. But they're senseless. can you say that? Because they live their life without God. That's why. They're senseless. They're the epitome of this parable. It means stupid. They have degrees. I'm great. Glad to have a degree. Do they have a degree in God and understanding what he wants? No. Well, they're stupid. Without reflection or intelligence. Wow. Now, this is the Lord talking, so I happen to agree with the Lord. Acting rashly is another definition of fools. And fools do act rashly. Like I said, you don't need 28 cars. That's acting rashly. Stupid. And I noticed that virtually all those, with the exception of maybe one or two, you couldn't tell them anything. If you try to tell them, they got that arrogant streak in them. Mm-hmm. And one lottery winner, actually, he won, and he brought a ticket or a bunch of tickets, and this whole meat plant won. And at the end, the announcer was saying that they went back to check on these people that had won all this money, and that they're still, I think he described it as still, what did he say, level-headed. Why do you have to do that? Why would you have to check on them to see if they're level-headed? Because, you know, if you're a fool with $10 now, you're going to be a fool with $1 million. Just a bigger fool. Strong's definition of the word fool means mindless. Yep, that'll work. That is stupid, ignorant, egotistic. Yep, yep. Give the person money, they'll be that way. Rash, morally unbelieving. Yep. Mm-hmm. And unwise. Yep. Mm-hmm. Unwise. Not doing anything wise, not making any decisions on wisdom. And I just have the question, do we get the picture how outrageously stupid it is to be covetous? It's stupid. And people are programmed, we're programmed to think that way from birth, for crying out. We're just programmed to do it and think that way. Now, along the life's journey, we could obviously make decisions and go, you know, I don't really need all that. We can easily say that as much as, I want all that. But we can say, I don't really need all that. That's not something I seek after. You know, but it is outrageously stupid. Not just stupid, but outrageously stupid to be covetous. What does it matter if you or I or anyone is covetous? How could that be a good thing? How could it be good to be covetous? I mean, it's in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's anything. Okay. Period. How could covetousness walk in agreement with God when it is totally and diametrically opposed to God and anything godly? How could it possibly be good? How could it be good? How could God's favor, yes, my son and daughter, I'm going to make you rich, knowing full well that you're already covetous, working at McDonald's, and now when I give you all this money, because Creflo said you can have it, you're going to be even more covetous and forgive me forever. Yes, I will bless your life that way. No. 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 See, great-grandma Louise out there, do you think is such a spiritual giant? She got a program on TBN and Creflo or Creflo or whatever flow, and she's listened to all them lies and covetous after all the lies that he got and all the money he got. It's all there. It's all that. We act like it don't happen in the world or the church. And in fact, if covetousness happens, it's always the world. It's never the church. It's the biggest lie in the world. You and I and no one else can serve two masters. We cannot walk in the spirit and in covetousness at the same time. It ain't happening. It's not happening. You can't walk in the spirit and then walk in a behavior diametrically opposed to the spirit of God and do it at the same time and think that both are happy. It's a joke. It's nonsense. It's what's in your cup to make you think that something remotely possible like that could even happen at all? God called the man a fool because he was a fool. You know, that's you know, when God gives a description, that's an accurate description. You know, you think God was wrong? You know, calling the man a fool? You call him a fool. He was a fool because he had no concern for his soul, spiritually speaking, because he did not regard the reality that wealth, riches, goods, possessions, whatever, cannot keep you alive and are no hedge against death. Mm-hmm. Yep. He was a fool. He connected his materialism to physical life, to the duration of his life. And I can hear people like, you're right, you need to be quiet because you're just like him. These things are not life. And they cannot secure your life. Only God can. Because God is the sustainer of life, not stuff. A dollar ain't never kept a person alive. But God has. God is the only one who has counted and knows the days of our living and death. Turn to Psalm 90. Now, people don't want to talk about dying and death. And I don't mind because it's going to happen. Well, I don't want it to happen. Well, it's not something I'm looking forward to in that regard, you know, because we're selfish. We want to keep living this life. We want to keep accomplishing or doing whatever. We want to keep being covetous. That's what it boils down to in most cases. We want to do things that we believe are right. And we have these hopes and dreams and blah, blah, like everybody else. Okay. Let's just say, for the sake of discussion here, that we're all going to die. Because that's one truth that will happen. You know, if you keep living, you want to be a dying. It don't matter how long or short. You know, my experience as a preacher, I've walked on more graves of young people than I have old ones. I know there are a lot of old ones out there, but we don't want to talk about them young ones. I've walked whole sections and just children. When are we going to see toddlers? They're all children. Just grave markers, rows and rows of children dying. You don't want to talk about it. We, in our mind, that don't happen. Yeah. You know what? Talk to the grave. Talk to the tombstones. They'll tell you what's happening. They keeps it real. You can't get no more real than that. But I talked about the fool not having wisdom. So if we as believers really get a hold of the truth that's in the Word of God, what will happen to us? Verse 12. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Okay. The context is God's wrath, of course. As great as God is, so is his wrath because of his greatness of the wrath of God against sin. Moses stated that he and Israel should go to God and ask him to teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Because God is God and his wrath is always present against sin and sinners, and because his wrath is as great as he is, then the thinking person will consider how to live life according to the wisdom of God. Yeah, teach us to number our days. We may apply our hearts to wisdom. We need to stop sinning and live like wise people. We need to seriously consider the way we live with the few days that we have, and we need to seriously consider how we live before God. You know, we worry about all this stuff. When we were 10, we wanted to be this, and then when we were this, we wanted to be that, and now I'm an adult, you know, and now I have all these objectives, and this is what I want to do before I get to 25, and this is my goal before I reach 30, because 30 is critical. I get to 30, and you know, all a bunch of things happen at 35. Oh, it's too late to do this at 35. Mm-hmm. I understand. I was there. Sure was. And I remember very vividly the day I said to myself, you know what? This is ridiculous. I'm not in control of anything. I'm setting all these goals for what? How about the goal of waking up in the morning? How about that goal? Okay, from then we can, you know, live for the day and see what the Lord will bring. Instead of, okay, I have a 5-year plan. I don't have any plan. I have a go to heaven plan. That's the plan. That's the goal. There are things I'd like to see. I'd like to see my daughters marry good, godly men. That's something that I'd like to see, but, you know, there's no guarantee I'm going to live to see it, and there's no guarantee they're going to have the horse sense enough to do it. That's my prayer, my hope. You know, we train them and hope they'll do it, but, you know, reality doesn't happen because I want things to happen the way things happen. You know, I like to see that. I like to see a number of things happen, but that's all in the want department, the wish list. No guarantees. And then when that moment happens, when both my daughters marry good, godly men, and you know, everything's secure the way I like it, and the few things because Lord, you know, I don't ask for much, but the few things that I like to see happen as life happen, and then let me lay down on my select comfort bed and have the angels of heaven ascend to the bed and usher my body through the roof and go straight to heaven. Oh, get real. We've all made plans, and all those plans are subject to God because He has a plan. And when I start worrying about my plan, I start thinking about His plan. And that's when things, oh, I got it now. I don't have to fret over a plan because I have no power to make a plan happen. I've been trying to make certain things happen. They ain't happening. And that's frustrating, you know, because if you're not careful, you wind up being covetous. There's nothing I can do to change anything. Well, that means you just sit on your behind. Well, that's what you think. Maybe you sitting on yours too long. That's not what I'm advocating. We need to number our days because of the brevity of our days. This parable is very clear and teaches us. You're not going to live forever in this world. You don't have any control over your days, seconds or moments of this life which the Lord has given us. We're not self-sustaining engines. We didn't give ourselves life, and we're not going to keep on living by our own means. So eat your goji berries, drink your acai juice, your white, green, or black tea. All right, eat fiber until the cow gets mad at you. In fact, just, you know, nuss up next to old Nelly and eat to your heart's content. Exercise till your hair falls off your head. Do whatever you got to do. Have all kinds of clean air machines and drink purified water and eat grass-fed beef and do all that and vegetables without PCB pesticides and throw all your plastic bottles away, drink out of nothing but glass. You know, do whatever you want to do and you're going to die anyway. Are you prepared to meet your maker is the question. Nobody wants to ask because nobody wants to ask about death. We were created by God to serve God, to worship Him and to do His will. Every other desire that does not fulfill that plan is rank sinful rebellion and iniquity and worthy of the judgment of God. We don't like that. Preacher, I don't like what you're saying. Well, don't listen because you probably wouldn't anyway. Because our days are brief, we should live all of them in the wisdom of God. Mm-hmm. David said in Psalm 39, verse 4, Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. That's amazing. Teach me, Lord, to know my end, to be ready for my end, for my death. It's always interesting that when some person is suffering some great tragedy, or is near death, they begin to meditate on that very purpose of life itself. Why meditate on the purpose of life when you're about ready to give it up? I don't understand why people do that. When you're about ready to die, suddenly you want to activate the brain portion that says, okay, what I need to be doing right now, because I'm about ready to kick the bucket, is to meditate on the purpose of life. Should you be doing that while you live? Rather than when you're dying? Okay, honey, I got 6 hours to live. Now I want to talk about the purpose of life. I don't think you're in much of a position to teach me anything. you've already shown me your purpose of life, and that is covetousness and rambunctiousness, and now you're going to give it up. It seems to me that we get so comfortable in doing life that we never really take much time to examine the purpose of it. We just do stuff, and why am I really here? I have all these goals. It doesn't matter if God doesn't will it, so why should your goal be a priority? Shouldn't God's will be a priority, seeing he's going to do his will anyway in the heavens and on the earth? Oh, we don't like this God. We don't like the big black preacher telling us anything like that. Let's find fault with the BBP and see if we can justify not listening to him. Don't listen. What? I don't understand why people that don't want to listen keep coming. Same thing. They remind me like the scribes and Pharisees. They hated Jesus, and everywhere he went, they were there. Well, why come? Why bother to listen to someone you don't care to listen to? It's stupid. You know, there's plenty of stuff on this time. There's the Laker playoffs. There's the Dodgers. You know, without Manny, my steroids, you know, whatever, number 99, you're going to be 99 years before he plays, 50 game suspension for being stupid, taking steroids, then denying he took them. Well, unless you're a woman, I don't know why you would take, I think it was GHC or whatever it was. It's an injection that women take for pregnancy. Oh, that's right. Bodybuilders take that stuff too, and they want to come off a steroid cycle. And so they would inject themselves with that particular former, that Manny, I ain't done the wrong, don't know, my doctor prescribed this medication to me, Ramirez. They take that to come off a steroid cycle so you can raise up the natural levels of male testosterone, because the stuff that they take knocks you out. But his doctor prescribed it. Ever, you know, when all these players, they got caught, you know, they all had an excuse. I made a mistake. Oops, I sat on a needle, and in the needle it had, you know, all the steroids in it, and I couldn't reach it to get it out my behind, so I just kept it there, and it just kept injecting steroids in me forever. How stupid do we have to be to believe this nonsense? I've never used steroids before. Ralphie Palmero, in front of Congress. They will find them if you take them. I have never taken steroids in my whole career, never taken any performance-enhancing drugs until he did the blood test, the urine test. Man was stacked with steroids, and he quietly moonwalked right out of baseball. I love it. I love it. And the vitamin, it was all vitamins. Or when I didn't know that the cream that Barry gave me was steroids. Uh-huh. Sure you did. Uh-huh. Right. I'm just going to hand you a bottle of cream and say, put this on you, and it's going to make you hit 50 home runs this year. Okay. I guess I shouldn't ask what is it or what's, you know. Okay, sure. And just walk away. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. We're all supposed to be so stupid. Maybe we all are stupid. I don't know. We don't know the purpose of our life. But sickness, near death, and imminent death has a way of making the purpose of life more vivid, or at least causing some to ponder how one has lived their life. It's too late. Too late to start thinking about that now, don't you think? It said in verse 5, behold, I was made my days as a handbreadth. And mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. I'm going to talk about that tonight, too. You know, because this idea that we're just going to keep on living, if we get our stuff and eat the best vitamins and nibble on the best cow meat and all that, we're going to die. Everybody walk around with towels on their noses trying to prevent flus and colds and the panic and the madness. We ain't seen nothing yet. You haven't seen it. Listen, you just better hold on a little while longer. You ain't seen nothing yet. It's all going to get crazier. Those people don't know that they're insane. Without God and that covetous bubble and God blow it up, or blown up, for those who want proper grammar, blown up, you just watch what happens. You know, because the one thing I know about the summertime, poor people get real stupid when the weather gets hot. They get crazy, especially your neck of the woods out there. Folk in L.A., they lose their mind. They get hot. They just lose it. And see, it's going to be a hot summer this year. And you got hot summer coupled with all the madness, both real and imagined, and all the hype about everything. After they done hyped everybody about, I told you about the news hype. Oh, the blasted pig flu, and everyone is hyped up and scared to go outside. Then they come out this week, last week, maybe it wasn't all that big a deal. Now let's talk about Lindsay Lohan again. No, let's move on. Hold on, y'all done got us all hyped about pig flu, and we folk afraid to eat pork rinds and pork chops like they can catch flu from eating pig. And then you just want to let us out like that, let us down that easy? Like, it wasn't that big a deal. All right, let's talk about Manny Ramirez. Wow. You just going to walk away like that? You got us all hyped up? Yeah, maybe it's not that bad, you know. No big deal. All right, let's go to movie. Let's do a movie here on Star Trek and Dance with the Stars. Hype. Let's not lower the hype. Hype up all this. The greatest Star Trek in the universe. Blah, 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 blah. And so they forgot the hype about the pig. Oh, let's go see a Star Trek. Let's get all crazy about a movie. What's tomorrow's hype going to be? What do the newsrooms think about hype of tomorrow? You'll see. He'll come and you'll laugh and go, that crazy pastor. He's so crazy. You know, you don't have to listen. But if I were sitting where you're sitting, I'd listen to that guy. You know, I do. I listen to the television programs in between church service most time, or definitely before next week is over. And my wife said, what do you think about that? I'm still amazed that I'm on television, but this guy is sounding good. I said, but that guy's you. I know that. That's what's so strange about it. He sounds real accurate with the word of God. That is so arrogant. No, I'm just, it's not arrogant. It's just the truth. You sit down, you listen, it makes sense. And that's what we want. We want, well, those who have sense want sense. I can't, you know, this is the only time I feel sorry about having to apologize for all the people that don't have sense. Or rather apologize for those few that do have it, you know, living in a world of most that don't want it. But anyway, let's just continue to thank God. And tonight we continue in this whole issue of the man's foolishness and our foolishness, if we don't see that life isn't as attached to our things as we think it is, because it's not at all. Lord, thank you again for the great blessing of your word, and I do pray that we would take heed to the things that you have taught us today. Bless the giving in Jesus' name. Amen.